There are many ways to indulge your sweet tooth, and this time of year there seems to be something wherever we look. But a single wonderfully made candy can really satisfy you, and certainly me, like almost nothing else. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we visit with Elizabeth LeBeau. Elizabeth is a food writer, a recipe developer, and an enthusiastic candy eater, and she is the author of The Sweet Book of Candy Making. I love this book. Her website is www.elizabethlebeau.com. LeBeau is spelled L-A-B-A-U, elizabethlebeau.com. She also blogs at sugarhero.com. Elizabeth, thanks again for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, it's so much. I hadn't looked at your book in a little while, and it's always such an upper to open that book and take a look at the wonderful candies that you have in it.
I mean, there's something about candy that just makes you happy as soon as you see those bright colors, right? It's hard to be glum when you're looking at some cheerful candy.
Oh, absolutely. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. We may have some candy makers. As you listen, are you a candy maker? What are your favorites? Do you give or receive homemade candies as gifts? Love to hear from you. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can post your questions or your comments there. What are the main categories of candies? There are a few main categories, aren't there?
Yeah, I sort of divide them in my head into there's fudges, there's truffles, there's hard candies that are primarily sugar, like lollipops and suckers, things like that. Fondant, cream centers are another category. There's marshmallows and nougats. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but those sort of are the big ones. And then within those, there are a lot of other divisions, too.
Yeah, and of course you cover them pretty much all in the book.
Yeah, I thought it would be helpful to divide the book by category because that's sort of how people tend to think of, you know, what do I want to bake? Well, I want something, you know, chocolatey like a truffle. And so then you would see all the truffle recipes all together.
Yeah, and I think it's great, and the photography is outstanding in your book.
Thank you. I worked with a professional photographer, and I think she did a great job of really making it pop, and we wanted it to be colorful and fun because candy is, you know, it's a little bit of a treat. It's an indulgence, and it should be something that makes you happy.
If we're, you know, people are probably thinking, well, what does it take? What's the basic equipment that a home chef would need to make candy?
The great thing about candy is you really don't need a lot of specialty equipment. Depending on what you're making, you might need a candy thermometer, which you can generally buy for $5 or $10 at any grocery store or, you know, large sort of Target or Walmart type store. But other than that, you need saucepans, whisks, spatulas. There's not a lot of specialty ingredients like in some other disciplines. So pick up your candy thermometer if you're going to make lollipops or something, and you're good to go, basically.
And foundation ingredients, what, sugar? What are foundation ingredients?
You definitely need sugar. Lots of chocolate is what I spend my money on, and cream often. If you're going to make truffles or fudges, sometimes you'll need cream or evaporated milk. But really, you need your sugar, your dairy, your chocolate, and you're pretty much covered.
Chocolates. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all. Go on.
All right. I was going to ask you about chocolates because are there certain chocolates that you go after? I mean, how do you get a good chocolate or get good chocolates for your candy?
Well, I recommend that you sort of need to balance taste and economy because chocolate's actually extremely expensive. And if you're just going to be using a little bit in a recipe with other strong flavors, you maybe don't want to spend $12 a pound on your chocolate if it's going to be covered up by tangy cranberries or cherries or something. So I recommend basically finding a chocolate that you enjoy the taste of, and that could be a pound plus bar from Trader Joe's that's about $4 a pound. It doesn't have to be the most expensive Valrhona if it's something that you like the taste of and something that works well in recipes for you. And it also sort of depends on what you're using it for. If you're using it in a If you're using it to coat truffles and you really need a beautiful, glossy finish, you need a chocolate with a high cocoa butter content. And so that might be a little more expensive, and you might want to, depending on where you live, if you have cake or candy supply stores where you can buy several different varieties of high-quality chocolate and try them out, that would be a good option. But if you're mixing it in with a fudge and it's going to be cooked and you don't need that beautiful glossy finish, maybe you could go a little more economical and get just sort of some bulk chocolate bars from the grocery store or from, online if you have that option to you. So it sort of depends on the usage, really.
Talking with Elizabeth LeBeau today about holiday candy making and her wonderful book. She's the author of The Sweet Book of Candy Making, and always a treat to talk with her. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you with your questions or experiences to share. Hanukkah starts tonight, actually, I believe, and you make some fun chocolate dreidels.
I really love making themed candies. And so for this Hanukkah, I made their squares of peanut butter fudge and sort of glue a Hershey's Kiss on the bottom using melted chocolate. And then when you dip the whole thing in chocolate, it has, you know, that traditional dreidel shape. And all you need to do then is stick a little pretzel stick in top and maybe write one of the Hebrew letters on the front if you want it to be really authentic. And you have these really cute edible dreidels you can share with family and friends to celebrate Hanukkah.
That's great. You really have some fun recipes, by the way, to share with our listeners. And one is for peanut butter cup fudge.
Yes, this is actually one of my most popular recipes. It's in the candy book. And then I also put it on my website, Sugar Hero. And people love it because, I mean, peanut butter cups are such a classic candy. And this is a creamy peanut butter fudge with little peanut butter cups in it. So you get the peanut butter and the chocolate together. And it's also, it's not an old-fashioned fudge, so it's pretty foolproof. You know, there's no beating, there's no taking the temperature and waiting for it to cool. So anyone can do it, and it's a really popular one for the holidays as gift-giving.
Yeah, I love that idea. And these recipes that you have, you've got some really kind of cool homemade candies that can be made as gifts, such as that one. You might like to make hot chocolate truffles as well.
Yeah, these are fun because they look like truffles, and you can eat them like truffles, but if you put them in a glass of hot milk and dissolve them, then you have a mug of hot chocolate. So it's sort of a double-duty gift. You could give them as truffles, you can give them in a cute mug packaged with some marshmallows, and then you have sort of a little hot chocolate themed gift that people can enjoy.
I love that, and we have that. We have that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and at WPR.org later on in the day. So that I know there are going to be a few of those made in the next few days. I can tell you that for sure because I've been thinking about doing it myself. Barb and Eau Claire, you are next. Thanks for calling, Barb.
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, I have made my mother's caramel recipe for many years, and we are in a house now that has a ceramic top electric stove, and I have thrown out more batches of caramels than you can imagine. I don't know if it's the temperature control. I don't know what's wrong, but it's been very, very difficult to make a decent batch of caramels and to get them to the proper temperature. Am I doing something wrong? Is it the stove? Is it the pan? Help!
Help, Elizabeth!
Is it that they're not firming up enough, or what are you getting as a
result?
Well,
sometimes they're not firm enough, and sometimes they're too firm. Sometimes they're too hard. You know, on these new stoves, the heat on the electric cooktop, you know, gets... The burner gets really hot, and then it, you know, the temperature drops, hot drops. So it really takes a long time for them to reach the hard or softball stage. I guess it's softball stage that I cook them to, like 248 or 348. Mm-hmm. What is it?
248. And what pan are you using? Is it a heavy bottomed pan? Because I think if you have... Go on.
Yes, I've used an old pan like my mom used with a copper bottom. Remember those back mm-hmm. in the day? I found one. And I've just purchased a new pan that has a very heavy bottom. And I'm going to try it again on a day when the sun shines, because my mother's recipe always says make caramels when it's a sunny day.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think the heavy-bottomed pan might help protect you from those temperature fluctuations. The more you can insulate the candy from those high highs and low lows, the more consistent your candy will be. If you're using a thermometer you've had for a long time, I would recommend testing it. And the way you can do that is put it in a pan of boiling water and let it sit for about 5 minutes. And, you know, depending on your altitude, if you're sort of close to sea level, it should be 212 degrees. And if you see that it's not, if it's 5 degrees higher or lower, then you know that your thermometer has been off by that many degrees and you need to adjust, either buy a new one, or you can sort of make that adjustment when you're cooking your candy. Because I've found that especially the cheaper thermometers, as they get older, they're less accurate. And even a few degrees, as you might know, even a few degrees, you can throw your candy for a loop. And so I would say the heavy bottom pan might help. Checking your thermometer, and then if necessary, getting a new one, or getting two thermometers and keeping them in to really monitor that temperature might help you.
Okay.
All right.
I will try. I'm not giving up.
All right.
Good luck.
Don't give up, Barb, for goodness sake. Oh, I have a ThermoWorks thermometer, and that thing is wonderful. That's expensive.
Are you a candy maker?
I've made candy, and we'll talk about that a little bit after we take a quick break for a look at the news and weather, and then we'll talk about my skills, but more about Elizabeth LeBose. Stay with us. There are many ways to indulge your sweet tooth, and this time of year there seems to be something wherever you look, but a single wonderfully made candy can really satisfy you like almost nothing else. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we visit with Elizabeth LeBose, food writer, a recipe developer, enthusiastic candy eater, and the author of The Sweet Book of Candy Making. Back for a visit. She's been with us in the past, and we've always enjoyed having her along. Her website is elizabethlebeau.com. She also blogs at sugarhero.com. And Elizabeth, again, thank you for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's always a lot of fun. And as you listen to Elizabeth and I talk, maybe you could join in with your own questions or comments. Do you make candy? What are your favorites? Do you give or receive homemade candies as gifts? What kinds? Questions about cooking or about what goes into it? Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can post your questions or your comments there. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I want to go back to homemade candies as gifts. We've talked earlier about hot chocolate truffles, which sounds just wonderful and not difficult to make, is it?
No, truffles are actually, I think, one of the biggest candy tricks because they seem really elegant, really fancy. And they're probably one of the easiest things you could make. You know, at heart, they're basically chocolate and cream mixed together. And so if you have a whisk and if you have those two ingredients, you can make truffles and then trick people into thinking you're a culinary genius. So hot chocolate truffles are the same thing. It's chocolate and cream. You know, give them a little dip in chocolate, a little sprinkle of candy canes on top if you want to make them seasonal. And people will think you're a whiz in the kitchen when really you just spend about 10 minutes.
And really that little?
Well, there's some chilling time, but the hands-on time is pretty minimal.
Well, and it's very straightforward and very straightforwardly explained in your book, which contains lots of wonderful photos. And actually, the hot chocolate truffles, we're going to have that recipe up on our WPR.org or on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page a little bit later on. Mike in Beaver Dam has a question for you. So let's go there. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We have a recipe. It's it's Billy Richardson's No Bake Drop Cookies. Anyway, it's got a few ingredients, but you bring it to a boil. It's milk, sugar, butter, and cocoa. You bring it to a boil for 2 minutes, and then you add peanut butter and oatmeal. It's a great recipe, but timing the boiling, it's like you see that we have copper bottom pans. You see the edge start to get a little boil on it, and the timing is always either short or long on this. Is there a good way to gauge when you consider something like that boiling?
I think this, you've been misled, because it's really tough to get the right temperature every time if you're just going by boiling time, because it can depend on the temperature of the ingredients you start with, or like you said, on the pan you use. And so I always prefer to tell people to cook to a specific temperature using a thermometer versus to cook for a specific amount of time. So what you would be looking for would be something around 235 degrees Fahrenheit if you happen to have a candy thermometer.
Sure.
And I think that's much more accurate.
Just get it to that temperature? Just get it to that temperature?
Okay. Yeah, so once it comes to a boil, insert the candy thermometer, and you want it to reach about 235 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's probably 2 to 4 minutes of boiling, sort of depending on your conditions. But I think that'll get you much more consistent and much more accurate results than just setting a timer.
This is a real short time. I mean, if you do it over 2 minutes, they'll be overdone. So it's a real temperamental time frame on it. I don't know if the temperature thing will work for that, I'd give it a try.
Yeah, it's certainly worth giving it a try. Absolutely. And good luck with it, Mike.
And I was going to say, what you might try is, you know, boiling it for 2 minutes with a thermometer in it and seeing what that thermometer says. And then from then on, you can use that exact temperature. You know, once you get your perfect cookie texture, you know what temperature you need to bring it to. And then you don't need to rely on the timer. You can rely on that temperature that you discovered is your perfect temperature.
Oh, very good idea. Very good tip. Mike, thanks for calling. I like that idea. Mary and Little Shoot, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, this is Mary. And we have a question. When we dip stuff in chocolate, like peanut butter balls, or even just make peanut custard nuts with the chocolate in that, sometimes, and then we try to put it on a cool pan and put it in a cool place, the store. But sometimes that chocolate still, when we pick it up, it'll get soft right away. Or sometimes that chocolate turns white, you know, kind of a funny, waxy-looking white. Is that the chocolate I'm using, or am I getting chocolate too hot, or what do you have for suggestions?
Yeah, so this is where the idea of tempering chocolate comes into play. I'm not sure if you are familiar with that, but tempering chocolate is when you heat and cool it to a specific temperature that makes it perfect for dipping. And if you don't temper chocolate, you run into problems like you're experiencing with either chocolate that doesn't set, that's sticky and soft, or that has whitish or grayish streaks on the outside. That's called chocolate bloom, and all that is the fats in the cocoa are rising to the surface of the chocolate. So it's still perfectly good to eat, but it doesn't have that shiny, smooth finish, and it doesn't have a snap when you bite into it. You know, it's softer or sometimes even crumbly. And so when you just melt chocolate to dip, it's not tempered, and so you do run the risk of having either soft chocolate or white, streaky chocolate. And really the only way to avoid that is to keep it refrigerated, because as it sits at room temperature, it's more likely that you'll run into these problems. So if you wanted to invest a little more time in it, you can pick up a chocolate thermometer. It's not the same as a candy thermometer. They're called chocolate thermometers, but you can get them for about $10 on Amazon. They're pretty simple, and you can temper the chocolate, and it takes about maybe half an hour. And it basically, you can do it in the microwave. And I can actually put a link on Larry's Facebook page to a long article explaining how to do it. And all you're going to do is you're going to heat it and cool it to a specific temperature. And when it's at the specific dipping temperature, then you can dip it like you would normally with any other chocolate. And it'll give you this really beautiful, shiny chocolate with a nice snap when you break it, just like the professional chocolates you find.
Ah.
Oh, wonderful. That's great.
Well, that's wonderful. And Elizabeth, you'll post that on our Facebook page then.
I will. As soon as we're done talking, I'll put it up on the page.
Oh, wonderful. I was just at our page, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and Meg had an interesting question. She says, I'm up for a real challenge this year. What is one of the most challenging candies I can try to make for this holiday?
I love this question. I love people who are ready to jump in with 2 feet. And this is a little subjective. I think what some people find challenging, other people have been making since they were young. And so, you know, I'm sure as soon as I say something, people are going to scoff and say, that's the easiest candy to make. I think, so hold your scoffing. But I really think anything that involves a lot of temperature precision is difficult. Things that involve sort of multiple moving parts, you know, as you're boiling a sugar syrup and also beating egg whites, I think those are just tricky logistically. And so for Meg, I would suggest if she hasn't already tried homemade marshmallows or homemade nougat, both of those involve you're beating egg whites and you're boiling sugar syrup and then you're pouring hot syrup into the egg whites. And it can just be like a lot of things to keep track of. And it's also something that not everyone makes homemade marshmallows or homemade nougat. And so it can be kind of a delightful experiment and a fun challenge for you and to share with your friends.
Oh, you know, I love that idea.
Yeah. And so if she hasn't tried those, I would say maybe a really nice peppermint marshmallow for Christmas could be really great. And I can leave a link for her for that as well.
And you have an amazing chapter in your book on marshmallows. And I thought, oh, marshmallows. But I look at your marshmallows do not look like the marshmallows you buy in the store.
I think a lot of people think they don't like marshmallows if they've only had sort of the very stale, hard, chewy ones you buy in a bag. Because homemade marshmallows are so nice. They're so sort of lush and plush. And they're a different beast entirely. And you can flavor them with anything. I love fruit-flavored marshmallows, like strawberry or passion fruit. They're nothing like the cardboard kind of sweet, flavorless ones you could buy. No offense if anyone works for a marshmallow company.
Well, and I think the peppermint swirl marshmallows is the most beautiful marshmallows I have ever seen. I mean, they're that you have in your book on page 116 and 17.
And for your readers, it's just a white marshmallow with peppermint flavor and some red swirls on top. But it is, I think, perfect for Christmas for sure.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. So I love that idea. So Meg, there you go. And Elizabeth's going to put
good
some. Yeah, good luck. Let us know how it turns out too. You're going to have to post on my site, but you're also going to have to go to Elizabeth's site and post on hers as well, because I'm sure you'll want to know how it turns out too, won't you?
I would love some follow-up feedback, absolutely.
I think so. Claire in Viroqua, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just had a suggestion for the woman who called in about the caramel.
Yeah.
I make them all the time, and I just use an electric kettle. And it doesn't ever burn, and they cook really easily and consistently with that, and I can kind of come back and forth, and I don't have to stir all the time, and it works every time.
So an electric, like an electric wok, or just an electric?
No, it's called an electric kettle, and so it's a fairly deep pan, but it's separate. I don't put it on the, you know, on a burner.
Well,
and it just works really easily, and that's what I've always done for caramel.
Well, that's interesting. Elizabeth, have you ever used one?
I haven't, but I think that's fascinating. And, I mean, I'd love to give it a try because anything that reduces the chance of caramels burning is a great idea to me.
they're not expensive, easy to find. I think it's Rival makes it.
All right. So, and again, it's just called an electric pot.
Yeah, electric kettle is what
electric
it's
kettle.
In the box,
sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's another potential holiday gift for somebody. Thanks, Claire.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. By the way, we have an open line or two. We can get you on at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Elizabeth LeBeau, author of The Sweet Book of Candy Making. And she blogs at sugarhero.com as well. Give us a call, though, and or shoot us an email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show with a question or comment. Or if you've got a question or if you've got a photo, I'll post that on our Facebook page as well. And this goes back to the earlier show, but since I'm looking at our Facebook page right now, I'm seeing Linda sent us a photo of the recipe for Swiss pear bread that we were talking about earlier. And I want to, and it's a nice photo of the recipe, and it's right there on our Facebook page. So now we will turn to Tom and Kimberly. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, my family's tradition is making chocolate-covered cherries. And what is very different about it is my grandmother's technique is to use a divinity as the center. All of the recipes that I've seen use a fondant. And this person earlier was looking for a challenge. This might be it. Because what we do is we make a divinity, and while it's still warm and pliable, wrap it around a cherry. And then once that sets up, you dip it in a good quality dark dipping chocolate. And then it takes probably 2 weeks for it to soften up. And I was curious if that is really unique, using a divinity instead of a fondant.
Hmm. What do you think, Elizabeth?
I think that is such a great idea. I've actually never heard of that being done before, but I can see why it would totally work. I think that's a really fun variation, and I also think I agree that that would be a challenge because you have not only making divinity, which is a little tricky, but then adding the cherries and the dipping. So I think you've solved our challenge for Meg.
That's another great challenge. And now, Tom, have you ever tried using cherries from Cherry Bump?
No, I've not. It's just the straight maraschino cherries.
Okay.
The other sources might be interesting.
Yeah.
Really do have to be very, very careful about your temperature, and also, you know, you're mixing the egg whites into the sugar, and you've got to be very careful when you start forming the cherries, because if you start too soon, they never set up. If you start too late, it sets up before you can wrap them around the cherry. So it's definitely, you know, get everything ready and
be ready to roll.
Yep.
Wow. This sounds great. And I said cherry bump. Some people call it cherry bounce. Some call it cherry bump. And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, Elizabeth.
I'm not. I think there's some regional things that maybe I'm not clued into. What is it?
Well, we are a state that produces a lot of cherries, and especially in Door County. And when people pick their cherries in the season in Door County, then they pit them, and well, some people do this, and then there's a mixture. You put them in a jar, and then you fill the rest. You fill the jar up with the cherries, but then in between you pour in brandy, and you let it sit for weeks.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Oh, it's very, yeah. Look up Cherry Bounce sometime on Facebook page. And see, I could imagine those wrapped up in divinity. That would be really...
I think you've just invented a new candy, Larry. You've come up with your own Christmas candy right now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it. Judy and Mequon, your turn. Hi, Judy.
I'm enjoying your program.
Thank you.
I have a ceramic top stove, and this is just good information for anybody who has that type of stove. It requires an absolutely flat-bottomed pan. Your pan cannot have warped or bowed, or your temperature rises and falls and rises and falls.
Oh.
So to check her pan to see that it's absolutely level.
Oh. Wow.
I learned that the hard way.
But once you've got a flat pan,
Yes, you have to have a perfectly flat-bottomed pan for the temperature to remain stable.
Yeah, and you know, the earlier caller was talking about a copper bottom pan that she was using, and I'm thinking about those pans, and I can't remember seeing a copper bottom pan that was not bowed up a little bit along the edges. Do you, Elizabeth?
No, but I think she also mentioned she just purchased a new one, so hopefully, if her new one was flat bottomed and had a heavier bottom that wouldn't warp, hopefully that will solve her problem.
Yeah, but that's a very interesting point. Judy, thank you.
You're welcome. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you as well. I really appreciate it. You have a fun recipe that I think would be great for kids to help with. I've got an 11-year-old, and I think this would be a fun one for her and I to work on. Reindeer cookie pops.
I think I mentioned before that I just love making these kind of cheesy themed, you know, candies. I just think it's so fun. When else can you make a reindeer shaped candy? You know, you only have 1 month. You might as well go big in December. And so these are just, you know, you can use any cookie, but I like using Nutter Butters that sort of have a peanut shape.
Yep.
Because once you dip them in chocolate and add some pretzel antlers and a little red candy nose, they look like a long reindeer face. And so this is a great one because there's nothing too hot. You know, kids can be involved with all the ingredients at every stage. They can give each reindeer their own little personality with different candies and expressions. And, of course, eating the ingredients while you're making them is always fun, too. So this is a great one for families to do as a little culinary project with kids, too.
Yeah, I love the idea. We'll have that up on our WPR.org and on our Facebook page a little later on in the day as well. What's your favorite candy to make? You have one?
Oh, gosh. This is like asking someone their favorite child. This is tough. You know, I'm a fudge person, I think. I love chocolate fudge, just with some walnuts or some pecans. And I would have to say, because you can add so many different things to it and transform it really easily with adding different ingredients or extracts, it's really flexible. And I think fudge would have to be my number one. But don't tell my other candies that I said that.
Oh, how is your book sale going? Have you sold a lot of books?
You know, it's going really well. They released a smaller edition called The Sweet Little Book of Candy Making that's intended for gift giving. It's sort of a condensed version. And it's also been translated into a lot of other languages, including ones like Estonian and Finnish and all sorts of things I don't speak. so I think it's traveling its way around the world, spreading the gospel of candy, hopefully making people happy.
Well, it's certainly it always makes me happy to talk with you. Thank you so much for taking time with us today. And I enjoy your blog as well, sugarhero.com. It's a great place to go.
Thank you so much for having me. I love it.
Oh, Elizabeth LeBeau. She's wonderful, isn't she? She is a food writer, recipe developer, enthusiastic candy eater, and the author of The Sweet Book of Candy Making. Her website, ElizabethLeBeau.com. And her name is spelled LA capital BAU.com. She also blogs at SugarHero.com. Great personality and so much fun to talk with her. And fun having you with us. Tomorrow we'll talk about phenology calendars and also snowshoeing with Darren Bush. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.